on Gabella Podcast, 102.9 MGK.
He will be at the new City Winery here in Philadelphia on Wednesday night. You can get tickets through citywinery.com. The one, the only, the magic man himself, Max Weinberg, is here. Hiya, Max.
Hey, John, how are you? It's good to be with you.
It's good to have you on the air with us. Now, before we get into the jukebox show, I've got to warn you, right? Well, Steve doesn't play any musical instruments. Dave still plays drums. I'm a former drummer, so we got to be careful where this goes, or we could be talking skins for hours.
Right. Well, we'll steer it away from talking about drumming and, I guess, just focusing on my drumming.
Okay, that's perfect. That's perfectly fine. But I do want to ask you this. Were you always a drum workshop guy, or what drums did you start out with?
Well, Ludwig, of course.
Ringo.
Of course. Naturally, okay, guys, yeah. Of course.
So how do these jukebox shows work? Are they actually, are people, like, making requests? What's going on?
Well, that's exactly what they do. They call out requests in real time. The idea is, you know, there's so many tribute bands out there, and I love them because they keep the music alive when so many of the groups are not playing anymore. This is kind of a tribute, if you will, to the era in which I grew up and the songs that I listened to, which coincidentally, I think is the best era of rock and roll, 50s, 60s, 70s. And we have a video screen that projects about 350 songs. And I'll come out and I'll play a couple songs and I'll tell people what to expect, but they just call out the songs. And I go, what do you want to hear? Why do you want to hear that? Oh, I see. They played Wonderful Tonight at your prom. That's what you want to hear. So there'll be little stories told back and forth. Sometimes a song we're going to play or that they ask us to play spark a memory in me, and I'll just spontaneously talk about, you know, how maybe I lifted the drum part, for example, for Candy's Room from Painted Black by the Rolling Stones.
Okay.
And, you know, we drummers, we pass these things along, but the middle section of Candy's Room is Painted Black, and it just worked.
We're going to have to play those back-to-back to pay attention to it now.
I'm curious now. Yeah.
You know, if I was at the show, and Dave, he would probably do the same thing, I would just be calling out drummer songs. You know, like, first thing, when you said calling
Hopper
out
song, teacher! Wipe out!
Right, I'd go glad all over.
We play it.
It's in the mix. It's in the mix. All right.
And by the way, if we don't know it, we'll fake it. But that's a Jersey. That's really a Jersey thing. You got to learn how to fake songs. I really enjoy this because I get to put on my Ringo Starr hat, my Charlie Watts hat, my Dave Clark hat, my LaVonna Helm hat.
This sounds like it's going to be a great show. Speaking of bands, how did you end up in the E Street Band?
Just lucky, I guess. Let me see. I was 23 years old. I was living at home with my parents. I was playing in a Broadway show, the drums in the show Godspell.
Oh,
which
sure.
Had that hit Day by Day in New York.
Which is all in flats. That song is all in flats. Day by Day.
Yeah, well, I'm a drummer. I don't hold with chords or melodies. But I was living home. I was going to college, Seton Hall University. I was playing a lot of club dates. And one of the bands I was in, two of the guys had auditioned for this guy Springsteen on piano. And about a month after they did that, one of them said to me, you know, they're still looking for a drummer. And I didn't know they were looking for a drummer, you know. But I saw the ad. They gave me the ad. And I called them up. I went down in August of 74, and I played. And, you know, you can tell in a couple of seconds if there's some kind of chemistry. And there was major chemistry. And one of the things that I really noticed about that first night, the night I met Bruce and the E Street Band, was, you know, he was obviously an incredible band leader. But it was the way that the guys who were there, which was Clarence Clemons, Dan Federici, and Gary Talent, the three of them were focused in on Bruce. The level of discipline and focus that was immediately evident in the first couple of minutes. And that was very impressive. I'd never seen that before where, you know, there was one person sort of driving the thing and everybody was just focused in on what he was doing. So, you know, I wanted in that first night. I found out later that something like 65 drummers auditioned.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And everybody, no matter how bad you were, got a half hour to play. And there were a couple of name drummers who went down there, I found out later. But everybody got a half hour. And that first night, We played for 3 hours.
Oh my God!
I didn't know that that was the longest they played with anybody. I was having a great time. You know, I had nothing at stake. I was just playing, and I thought I did pretty well. Actually, I thought I did pretty well because it was on the fourth floor of a rehearsal studio on 54th Street in New York City, and I had to carry my drums up these four stairs.
Oh God!
Stairs. Because the elevator was out. After the 3 hours and I packed up, Bruce helped me carry the drums downstairs.
Oh, cool.
You know, and he told me he had two records out on Columbia Records, and they had one song recorded for, you know, what would hopefully be his third record, and that song was Born to Run.
Oh, my Lord.
You know, so they gave me a copy of that and said, you know, learn this.
What was the first gig you did?
Actually, the very first gig I did was at the Main Point outside of Philly, and I guess near Villanova. Yeah, it was the very first night I played, which was about 10 days after I got in the band. We rehearsed for about 10 days and played the Main Point. And that was an incredible night because that was one of the real popular places he played.
Sure.
And,
you know, that club, if you packed it, you were lucky. You would push maybe about 300 people inside. But somehow, a million people say they were there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but finally we can believe one of them.
I was there. Actually, I was there and I had the best seat in the house, to tell you the truth, which I've continued for 45 years. It really is the best seat in the house.
How did you get into the habit of constantly staring at Bruce in a show, whether he's in front of you, behind you? When did you start doing that, and what is the reason for it?
Well, I started doing that immediately after I screwed up at the Bottom Line in August of 1975. I wasn't looking at Bruce. I happened to be looking at a young lady who was in the first row, you know, at a club, and he gave a cue to stop, and I didn't stop. I didn't ever do that again, I can tell you that. We had a discussion about that. So the idea is, you know, you've got to hook up to his energy, and wherever he could go, the only thing you can be really sure of is that you're not really sure ever of what he's going to do. So the drummer in any band, whether it's me or any jazz band, really is the sort of underpinning, the architecture music lays on top of. So if it, you know, if you mess up on the drums, it sounds like you're dropping the kitchen sink down the stairs. So my thing of watching Bruce is I'm in a space, and I only can get like that when I play with Bruce. I'm in a space where things are happening almost simultaneously, where he'll be conceiving of something, transmitting it to me kind of subtly even, and I'll pick it up because I'm so finely attuned to his vibrations, if you'll allow me that term, you know. And it served me well because also the time goes by really quickly for me. You know, 4 hours seems like a half hour because you're in this zone. I mean, I've heard athletes talk about that kind of thing, and musicians too. You know, we're not a jam band per se, but the same kind of focus that any sort of high-level endeavor would require is what we do. And it's particularly a function of the drummer or, in hockey, the goalie. When the action is in your zone, you can't let up for a second. So the analogies to sports are actually pretty appropriate because it's like that.
Bruce has been buzzing a lot of talk, and I know from Steven, when it comes to talking to you guys, that you don't necessarily have the answers to these questions. But because he said there's going to be a tour, he said there's going to be an album. Do you have any information of, obviously the album would come before the tour, right? Do you have any information of, like, when on any of this stuff?
No.
I'm not surprised.
It's a, you know, and that's the truth. It's above my pay grade. I haven't really asked for 45 years, and it worked out. And, you know, you can tour, obviously, without a record. We did that. We had a record come out when we were on tour of new stuff. High Hopes, it was called,
right,
back in, I think, 2015 and 16. So, you know, these days in the music business is quite different. It would be great to do that. I always love playing with Bruce and the E Street Band. I look forward to it. Should we, you know, embark on that again? When I was on TV, it was a little bit more organized than just a phone call because I had you know, I was on television for 17 years, mm-hmm. and I had people I was responsible to there. But you know, I'm 68 now. He's 70, and this is all gravy if we do it again. We've had an amazing run, unbelievable fans, particularly in your area. You know, Philly is
it's huge.
Philly was always the place. Ed Shockey playing all the records. He was the first guy to play records. Mm-hmm. Back in the 70s, and my memories of, you know, we played the Philly area, every college within 50 miles of Philadelphia, that first tour in 1974 that I did. So my memories are always associated with the great, unbelievably dedicated audiences in Philadelphia. And it was cool that, you know, my father's family was from Philadelphia and the surrounding areas. So I can't wait to come back and play at the City Winery.
Max, cooler thing for you, you playing with Bruce or your kid playing with Bruce?
My son, Jay. It's cool for me to play with Bruce, but when your son gets up there at the age of 17 in Giants Stadium for 83,000 people and plays Born to Run, my mother was there, my wife, Becky, was there, my daughter, Allie, was there. It brought tears to all of our eyes because he carried it off with such class and aplomb. And now, of course, he's I'm known as Jay Weinberg's father. So, you know, as a father, that's the most pleasing thing in the world, is that your children do better than you. So, you know, he's also my best friend, and we talk every day. Wonderful, wonderful gentleman.
That's great. Well, Max Weinberg will be at the City Winery, the new City Winery here in Philadelphia, Wednesday night. Tickets are available, citywinery.com. Max, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much. I wish, unfortunately, Wednesday is a school night, and when you're a morning guy getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm not going to be able to make this show. But eventually you'll play a weekend somewhere where I can come see it, because this screams everything I love about music.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, John, and I look forward to seeing you at a jukebox show at some point in the future.
Classic Rock 102.9 MGK.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.